You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 107. Being a screenwriter is not enough for a full creative life. William Goldman.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft, it's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. And today's show is also sponsored by the Heart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass, taught by legendary screenwriter James V. Hart, the writer of Bram Stoker's Dracula, Hook, and Contact, to name a few. His unique story mapping system will teach you how to get your script ready for production and the marketplace. To gain instant access, head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heart chart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Well, guys, today is part two of that limited series I am doing with James V. Hart. And today he is interviewing the Oscar-winning Damien Chazelle, the creative force behind La La Land and Whiplash. And in this conversation between James and Damien, they talk about the origins of La La Land, how he came up with it, how he built the characters. It is a fascinating conversation, sitting down and again being a fly on the wall of a great conversation between two master screenwriters. So without any further ado, please enjoy the conversation between James V. Hart and Damien Chazelle.
Hello, sir.
Hi.
Yeah, you can hear me.
I can. Wow, hey. That's a great stage.
Well, they're all the guys are working here, and I'll show Damien the ballroom when he gets here.
There's
about 250 people, so they're setting up tomorrow, and it should be a pretty good turnout. Everybody's excited about seeing this version. Yeah, so appreciate it. And actually, technically, it's better that we do this now.
Good.
Rather than trying to do it live tomorrow.
Instead of fiddling with all the technology tomorrow.
Yeah, it's just one more thing to go wrong, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool. Let me.
Yeah, I'm getting a thumbs up from Brian and our tech guys. It's a good thing we're not doing this live tomorrow, so.
It's certainly helpful for us. Yeah. I mean, well, even the day when we're not shooting, it's like, well, what is a 10, 15 minute time slot that we can even guarantee? It's so crazy.
Yeah. No, I really appreciate it. But, where are you in Georgia?
In Atlanta.
Oh, Atlanta. Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you shooting at the
We're at Tyler Perry Studios.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
he's not busy.
I know. I don't know if this was the slogan before, but right out front of the studio it says "Here we grow again," and it cracks me up every time.
Here we grow again?
Yeah.
Don't grow up. How much longer on the shoot?
Well, tomorrow is the first pre-shoot day. So that's...
Oh, my God.
Ta-da! Whoa. Ta-da! There he is. Damien, we are sitting in the... This is where we're going to be showing your clips tomorrow. Oh, there's a clip right there.
Oh, wow. I recognize
that. You've seen that before. What model is that? and over here, the chart's going to go.
Oh, that's so cool.
And here's the whole gang and the tech crew setting up the ballroom.
Oh, hey, guys.
They had it, Damien. They had it, Damien.
Oh, that room is cool.
And well, it's a big room. And
this is more of like a small classroom. That's awesome.
No, that's what I wanted you to see, that this is, there's a lot of excitement about this, and we really appreciate you authorizing me to take you apart, you know? So, La La Land.
Yeah, be
Damien, the youngest director to ever win an Academy Award, and now he's old enough to grow a beard.
Yeah, I got a little bit.
But tomorrow we'll be spending an hour and a half going through the process with the chart of La La Land. Cool. And you and I have spoken about this. I just want all of you to know that Damien approved the picked clips. He picked the points in the film that he thought were the most important, and we built the chart around that. But you have some news that I think maybe has nothing to do with the movie business. Has nothing to do with working with Ryan again or walking on the moon, but you're about to take a big step in your life.
Oh yeah, I got engaged.
Ah,
yeah. I guess now 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah. Good.
A little under. Well, we knew you weren't pregnant, but engaged is that's at least.
Could be one or the other. Yeah. No, no pregnancy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we actually met through Benj Pasek many years. Who wound up writing the lyrics on.
Yes.
So, you know.
Well, we also just saw the Broadway musical that they've also written the lyrics for. Which is staggering. So you assembled quite a team. How many of the – what percentage of the people that you had already known and worked with did you bring into the production?
Well, the only one who I knew from way back when was Justin Hurwitz, who wrote the music. And so that, you know, we had kind of played in this genre before together and,
right.
and talked about wanting to do a musical together. And so the next two people who I met to kind of make this with were the producers, Fred Berger and Jordan Horowitz. I know, you know, both of them, Jordan.
Yes, pretty well.
So for the longest time, it was just the three of them, me and Justin, Fred, and Jordan, for a number of years, just kind of trying to beat this into shape, get it into script form, get the music out there, get demos written. Then we started to assemble other parts of the music team, like Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, who wrote all the lyrics, and Mandy Moore, our choreographer, and Marius DeVries, our music producer. And then it was kind of one step at a time. Trying to kind of get this fully fleshed out.
I did have the pleasure of meeting the executive at Focus who put you into Turnaround.
Oh, did you?
he said, "I'm sorry, I'm the guy that put your son-in-law's the movie into." Jordan Horowitz is my son-in-law that produced the payment.
They did us a favor, to be honest, because first of all, they gave us the initial kind of push to actually, I mean, without Focus features kind of getting this going initially, you know, I don't know that me, Fred, and Jordan, that we enter each other's orbit. Right. And then to their credit, once they decided that they weren't going to make the movie, they didn't kind of make us languish in development hell. They just let us go. Granted, it was a scary moment, you know, because we were... Yeah. You know, it feels like you're orphaned, and it was a number of years before we found another home for the movie. It took a while.
I have two quick questions, and then we're going to jump into the chart. You and I talked about what you think the ending of the movie is, and the ending has been a very stirred a lot of conversation, a lot of discussion, a lot of debate over the choice you made of the ending. You and I spoke about the bench scene where Mia and Seb sort of have a. They sort of settled, so they resolved their conflicts. It's after the audition, which is still my favorite song. That was my vote. The audition is a staggering song. And I'm sure in the Broadway show, it will be a showstopper.
Wow.
Can you just talk about your process? Because everybody here is a writer, a producer, a director, or all three. A little bit about your process on what you, why you chose the way to end the film you did and what your feelings were about the bench scene and what came after.
Well, the bench scene, I guess, probably came later because I think at the very start, I knew roughly where we were headed in terms of the final scene. I knew I wanted to tell a story about a romance that doesn't, you know, that doesn't last forever, something that winds up being a finite moment in these people's lives. And they're kind of like two ships passing in the night. They cross for a moment, and that moment is crucial for both of them. But they wind up going their separate directions. And I knew I wanted the tone of the ending to be okay with that, you know, that I didn't really see it as a tragic ending. I mean, I was certainly very inspired by, The Umbrellas of Cherbourg, the French musical from the 60s. And that similarly does not keep the romance going at the end. But where's the tone there? I think is a little more, again, tragic. I think here I wanted there to be a real hope to the ending, and also this idea that, you know, some dreams come true, some don't. This wouldn't be an honest movie if every dream in it came true. It wouldn't be an honest movie if every dream didn't. But it's a movie about dreamers. It's a movie about the dreams that kind of push us and guide us. So it was important to me that, you know, some things work out, some don't, that, you know, that Mia becomes the actress she wanted to become, that in many ways Sebastian becomes a version of himself that he wanted to become, but sacrifices come with that. So I guess I saw it as still a positive ending, but just one that maybe would be a little less predictable.
Well, it's very grown up and very mature, and it pissed a lot of people off, but it also embraced a lot of people. You gave the audience the Hollywood ending. You gave them that what if they lived happily ever after. And then so the audience got that rush, got that emotional charge, and then you brought it back and landed and made it very responsible, very adult, very grown up.
Yeah, well, I think sometimes it's also like, I mean, we talked a lot about me, Fred, and Jordan about, you know, the ways in which we wanted to really wholeheartedly embrace the musical genre and then ways in which we wanted to, you know, try to tweak it a bit and subvert it. And, you know, sometimes I really feel life does feel like a musical and sometimes it really does not. And so I think I wanted to make sure that we played with both ideas in this movie, the times in which life really feels like it's entering that magical movie realm, like when you're falling in love, or that moment when a dream comes true. But then there's times where you really feel as far away from as possible. And I really think the structure of the movie for me was about kind of this push and pull between life and fantasy, reality and fantasy. And that at the end, in a way, you really want to put them side by side in the most direct way possible. Yeah. That felt to me like what we were building up to, the equation we were building up to, life and fantasy side by side.
Clever.
And in a way, as a viewer, you can kind of choose which you prefer.
Well, you take us from the star dance, which is a total ultimate expression of falling in love. And you crash and burn us with the dinner fight. So you would go from that amazing peak. That's the beginning of that whole romance. And I'm sure we've all felt that way. We're dancing. Mm-hmm. And the kiss at the end of that sequence is dead center of the story. And then you take it all away from us at the dinner fight.
Yeah.
Here's a question we always ask, and then I'll let you go so we can go do the chart. Whose story is it?
Oh, well, I mean, to me, I really think it's going to sound like a cop out that it's both Mia and Sebastian's stories. And I think in a way that was the challenge because even a lot of the movies that we were inspired by, whether they were dramatic love stories or romantic comedies or musicals, you know, ultimately kind of sided with one individual over the other. But I really felt strongly here that you know, both points of view had to be privileged, and it just depended on what, you know, which point of view we were taking at which point, but that we needed to kind of hop back and forth. It's also, I guess, why, I mean, I think in many ways it's about these two people as a couple in relation to the rest of the world. It's kind of why after the opening number, there's no musical number outside of these two people, you know, so we use our opening traffic number as an entree into the world. But then at that point, everything becomes more and more intimate and more motivated by just those two people. So you don't have auxiliary characters having their own.
I'm only charting two characters. I usually chart five or six, and it's a beautifully structured screenplay, and it's a beautifully structured film. On page 38 of your script is The Dance in the Stars, which is the dead center of your movie, which is 58 minutes into your movie.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just doing this because the director, to me, decides what the time, running time of the movie is, not the page count.
Right, right. Well,
that whole 1 minute page. And now you're working with Ryan again doing Life After La La Land.
Yeah, it's the sequel. Sad, lonely years of Sebastian. I mean, in many ways, it feels like a 180. We're doing a movie about the moon landing, and Ryan's playing Neil Armstrong. But, you know, I guess you could say one similarity is that, again, it's a movie about very literally outsized dreams.
I want to thank you. Everybody here tomorrow will be applauding and cheering you, and hopefully I will be able to live up to these expectations you've set for us. And I really appreciate it. It was great. Come to Austin. You'll love this festival. It's a writer's festival.
Yeah, this looks awesome.
It's it. And congratulations on your engagement.
Thank you.
Say hi to Seb in the spacesuit for us.
Will do. I'll tell him you say hi.
Thank you, sir. Be safe. Thank you. Thanks, Alan. Alyssa for doing all the hard work for us. We really
appreciate it. Thank you, Alyssa. See, it worked. Technology.
Yeah, there you go.
Amazing.
Walk on the moon. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to get links to anything that we talked about in this episode, head over to the show notes at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/107. And we have one more in this limited series coming out in the next couple weeks with James V. Hart. And if you haven't checked out his new course, the Hart Chart Screenwriting Masterclass over at IFH Academy, you are missing out. It is a game-changing course. Head over to bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/heartchart. That's H-A-R-T chart. Thank you so much for listening. As always, keep on writing no matter what. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.